allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers? Know that you are blessed. I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
What's up, sinners and choosers? Welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe. If this is your first time, we are figuring out if we believe things, if believing things matters. We talk about whatever we grew up with. For me, my dad is a Presbyterian minister, and I continue to be neither. But there's something about a faith journey that I still get off on. And I appreciate you guys joining me for mine. I'm so excited to have Greg Hollander on the show today. Greg is an editor out here in LA who just finished up working on pop star Never Stop, Never Stopping, which is by a little group you might have heard of called The Lonely Island. And that's a movie coming out, I think, this weekend. I think it's out. So you should definitely check that out and see all the sweet cuts made. And you can also check out the YouTube sketch channel Zamboni Grenade, which is Greg's channel. And Greg is the latest guest on the little mini-series in this podcast, which is Christians in the Entertainment Industry. It's so ballsy to talk about your faith out here in L.A. I mean, I've been out here for 4 years doing stand-up, not really believing in classic God. And I didn't want to talk about religion for the longest time. And it would have been easy. Now I have a podcast that I just hide behind relativism and take a sort of, we're all one and all religions are pointing to the same thing. I mean, that does happen to be what I believe, but it's safe. It's easy. And so I just think it's so cool that Greg and others that have been on the show, like Dan Prevett, Michael Gardner, and still others who are active members of their faith are willing to be open about it. So thank you so much to Greg. And I can't thank you guys enough because this is my current faith community. I'm shopping around right now. I'm still looking. This is an active process for me, trying to figure out where I belong, if anywhere. I'm attending Unitarian ones. I'm going back to an Episcopalian one. I'm thinking about some temples and some synagogues just to peek my head in and see what's up. I'm still skeptical that I'll fit in at any of them, but I love that right now I do have some kind of community to be in discussion, to be around people, to seek truth, love justice, and love love. And I'm so thankful the internet exists and makes this possible. And by the way, guys, something I feel the need to say that I get self-conscious about producing a religious podcast is that I am a massive hypocrite. But most people I've ever met are hypocrites some of the time, too. But I think that's what makes us interesting people. I don't know if you watch Game of Thrones. We talk about it a little bit in this episode, but I don't know. Like, Ned Stark is great, but I don't know if I really want to be hanging out with a Ned Stark all the time, someone who's always going on and on about his sense of honor. How annoying would that be, especially if he actually lived up to it? Oh, man. And so, yeah, guys, I am for sure a hypocrite. And that's what I think is so funny about times I've criticized churches before for being full of hypocrites. If I'm looking for a spiritual community, what better place to start than with a bunch of fellow hypocrites? And so I beg you, if you are a hypocrite and you're listening to this, join me in communion for these episodes. So once again, thanks so much, guys. And if you like this show, check out ChooseYourOwnReligion.com. We have all the episodes there. Check out the Facebook page, which will have the new episode each Sunday, and you can like that page and just keep updated. Thanks so much to everybody who has reached out. I can't say that enough each week. This is truly the most fulfilling thing I do, and it continues to be fulfilling because I continue to hear back from people. And so, thanks so much. But it's not just you. It's Jah, through whom all things are possible. So, okay, I did a smidge of research on you.
Okay.
And well, obviously, I don't. Like, some of my research is just knowing you through life.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
That you improvise.
Yes, that's correct.
I would. It'd be weird if you didn't, given how I met you through.
Be super
UCB.
Weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just love hanging around that crowd. But.
You're like a being like an improv team groupie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like an indie improv team groupie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just getting autographs.
Yeah.
Hey guys.
And you're a professional editor.
That's correct.
And you are also a big fan of Game of Thrones.
Yes. It's very true.
Without giving, I want to keep this spoiler free because who knows who's going to listen to this at what point
in
time.
It's very, very noble of you to do that.
Wherever, yeah. Well, they would just hate me. It's not really about nobility.
Yeah.
She's like, fuck you.
They would murder you.
Fuck you so hard.
Yeah.
Did you read the books?
I did not.
Yeah, I didn't either.
No.
Not a book reader.
And it's this weird thing where like, because we have screenings every Sunday night. We have friends over and stuff like that. And there used to be this huge divide.
Oh yeah.
Between the book readers and the filthy filthy casual show
right.
watchers.
Right.
So stupid because they'd be on their high horse after every episode and they'd like huddle in their little corner.
Uh-huh.
They'd be like, oh my god, did you see that one character that we read about is gonna, and we're all just seeing like, oh my god.
Just shut up.
And then every time like a big moment would come, they'd be like, oh man, I can't wait. And I was like, shut
oh
the fuck
my
up.
God. Yeah, shut up.
Yeah. But now they can't do that because the show's caught up to the books now.
Right.
And of course they're just like, well, it's not canon. And I was like, get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if, because season 6 now? Yeah, that's beyond the scope of the books.
Yeah.
I guess they're still touching on some stuff that was like, old threads that were maybe in the
apparently there's still some things that they like book readers have like have up their sleeve that they know but apparently I mean the way that the showrunners have talked about it, you know, like they know all the main milestones, like George R. R. Martin has told them all the major milestones of the show and it's kind of just like however they decide to get there is up to them.
Gotcha. So he's told them. I was imagining like he's not like, is he gonna be taking notes on like, oh shit, I gotta include this?
No. Yeah I mean like there will obviously end up being huge differences between the books and the shows now because apparently there are many like there are multiple characters that are like dead in the show that are alive in the books and vice versa, and there are certain characters that aren't even that same location in that point in the book, and so there will already be huge differences, but hopefully the major things that happen plot wise will be the same.
Yeah.
So
now did you binge it from, or did you get on board like early on, or were you more like, because I just binged it last year.
Oh wow.
And caught up
all the way through.
Yeah, this is my first season of like actually having to wait.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's crazy. How did I do? I think I didn't I think I didn't watch most of the first season, and then it started getting a lot of buzz and everybody's like, you've got to watch this show.
Mm-hmm.
So I started binging it for after like they were on episode 10 or something like that. So I was kind of like catching up in the first season, and it was like super boring. I don't know if you remember those first few episodes, but like the first few are very slow.
Yeah.
They're trying to establish so many characters and so many storylines like that.
Yeah.
And you're just like, this is, I don't know about that, but I distinctly remember it was like episode 6.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's a major event that happens, and I remember for whatever reason it hooked me, and I was like, this show
like,
is
oh
great.
Shit, like anything can happen.
Yeah, and I started to make connections, like who, like I, all the names of who people were. I was like, oh, that guy's this guy's brother, and everything. And then once you get an idea of where everything is, who everybody is, then it becomes really fun.
Yeah, that was like me in The Wire too.
That was literally the next thing I was going to bring up was The Wire because it's very similar.
Yeah,
very similar.
This is definitely two shows where I actually do watch the recap of like what happened last week.
Oh yeah,
because it's just necessary.
You got to, especially The Wire, because The Wire does not hold your hand whatsoever.
Mm-mm. No,
which is what I like about it. I mean, it makes you feel smart after watching the show a while, because you start to pick up on like the lingo and like all the different characters and stuff like that, and then and the show gets really good.
I feel 15% blacker for sure.
For sure. Yeah.
Which if you 15% of 0% is still zero. But
so
I mean,
if you do your math
right.
Yeah.
Now I'm curious, as a complete layman who has no, I have no way of judging this one way or the other, how is the editing on Game of Thrones from your standpoint?
It's weird. I mean, like, I've never really sat down and like analyzed it that much.
Uh-huh.
Usually when I like to watch movies or TV shows, I watch it one way through just to enjoy it and get caught up in the story.
Right.
And then if I feel like it and I really enjoy it, I'll go back and like pick it apart. But just from like a general viewing of it, It's pretty damn good. I mean, like, just like pacing wise and also like being able to, especially this season, being able to jump back and forth between different storylines and not make it feel too rushed or hectic or too slow, because there's a lot of stuff that they have to get through is a feat in itself, especially to keep it under an hour.
Yeah, so like, what are the macro level things of like editing? I mean, pacing, shot selection, I guess. Is that under the editor, or is that more director purview?
No, yeah. I mean, it's both. It's tough to say. It's very hard to pick those two things apart now, you know, because the director is so involved in editing. But, you know, a lot of what the editor brings to the table, that is not as that comes from his or her personal skill set is pacing, continuity, partially shot selection, partially just making your work invisible, making sure the style or direction calls for it, making air edits as smooth as possible, and rhythm. Rhythm is a big thing of just like making sure that it's actually a huge thing. Rhythm is just like, even if you want to cut a certain speed, you got to have to keep in mind, like, if viewers watching it for the first time, can process all this information that fast, and how long down to the frame you need to hold on a shot to either not make it too confusing or to like get the emotion that you're trying to get across.
Yeah, dude, that reminds me so much of stand up and like kind of working on bits, and especially like, and I made this connection just through hearing Lucy K talk about it, because he edits his own stuff. Mm-hmm. Thinking about it in terms of editing like a stand-up bit, I definitely, when I was younger, it's just like, I was so precious with every little part of my material. It was so hard to cut any of it, but really, I don't know, the way that I've come to view it and maybe appreciate it is it's like making it musical. You know, it's making it palatable to an outsider ear. It is making it invisible, versus like you have so much raw data. You just have to fucking sift through.
Yes. Yeah. Right. That's very, very astute, Joe. Very astute.
I don't know if it's astute or just like, it's like, I'm always funneling things through stand up. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't say narcissistically, but
no, but yeah. Yeah. But like, whether or not you realize, I mean, like, that's like, that is exactly what an editor has to do in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It's what fascinates me so much about editing. I've worked a lot in my own career. I've just happened to work on more comedies than anything else so far, and by far comedy editing is the hardest to edit. Most people wouldn't think that. Most people be like, oh, if you watch like a Born Identity or something like that, like that must be impossible to cut. But it's actually not as hard as you would think, because in an action scene, when you're cutting, there's a very certain specific like order of actions that has to happen. You have to punch him in the face. He has to like fly back into the bookshelf. He falls down. He grabs a pen, stabs him in the hand, throws him out the window, and he dies. Like whatever happens, it has to happen in that order. Maybe you can cut out something in between, but in general, that is the framework and you're stuck to that. So at that point, it's just a matter of picking what angle fits the action. Whereas in a comedy, especially nowadays with like, especially somebody like Apatow, who just like, they just let their actors riff and riff and riff. It's just a floating like three camera setup or two camera setup and just a ton of improv. And at that point, you know, you have two takes on book, five takes off book,
or
some mixture thereof. And if it's just if you're cutting a conversation between me and you like this, there are literally millions of different choices.
Oh yeah.
And it's very tough to cut. And the other hard part is if it's a comedy, which most improv happens in comedy, literally just like in a stand-up set, like a beat, an extra beat or in editing it like translates to frames of a second or frames of 24 frames a second. So, like three frames, which is, you know, an eighth of a second, can make a punchline hit harder.
Yeah.
Which when you start to think about it, you can like drive yourself insane.
Oh, so crazy.
Because you'll be going left, right, one frame left, two frames left, three frames right. And you're just like, oh, I thought it was funnier. There was a certain point where it was just funnier for whatever reason, that exact amount of time.
And that's only after you've decided like which of the takes is the funniest take, exactly. Just like on a general level.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty intense, but it's also endlessly fascinating to me.
Yeah.
The power that an editor has that I think most people don't realize, that, you know, you're directing and choosing what people are going to feel. They call a lot of people call editing like the final rewrite, because you all have a chance to rewrite the entire script in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And you're choosing how long to, like, you can add air or take away air in people's speech and cadence, which can completely change a performance. And like,
yeah,
it's crazy.
And it's like, yeah. There's so much for me, it sounds like it. There's so much more that's, I mean, it's like technical, but yeah. There's a lot of stuff that's not tech. It's just it is about like having good taste and judgment.
Yes.
And like an undefinable quality.
Yes.
So like I think Apatow works with the same editor, right? I think there's some guys who do.
He has a few different editors.
Okay. Yeah.
I actually just worked. So I just worked on the Lonely Island movie,
uh-huh.
Popstar, which is coming out in
about
a month, and which is produced by Apatow.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And so we were in his offices for several months, and he works with a couple different people, depending on if it's a feature or a TV show, because they just did Love, which was that Netflix series.
Right, and with the shaved Kyle Kinane that was so confusing.
Yeah, very confusing. And they're doing Pete Holmes' pilot for HBO, which is coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
But he has like a wheelhouse of people that he uses.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, do you have like any particular directors that like at this point of your career? I mean, you're still pretty much a young gun.
A youngin?
Yeah. Well, I'm a young gun too. Yeah. We're a couple of young bucks.
Yeah. Budding young buds in LA.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, what was the question?
Do you have any director right now that you've kind of, that you feel like you've developed like a sort of like, oh yeah, we're going to like work together a lot.
Not so much directors as there are editors.
Uh huh.
Because directors is like the directors mainly work with just the lead editors. I'm an assistant editor.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
And so you know, I do interface a lot with the directors, but at the end of the day, the relationship is editor director. So my mm-hmm. relationship, the people that I need to and want to follow and stick around with are editors.
Cool.
So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, for a strong pivot, There's like, I was like trying to think like, how can I segue from this? Well, in the way that you would edit. Okay. Let me give it a shot.
It's a great bit. It's a great bit.
Let me give it a shot. All right. So Ryan, our mutual friend, Ryan Middledorf, told me that you grew up in a Jewish and Christian household, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And you had some element of choice there, right?
That's correct.
So in a way, you got,
podcast.
You should listen to Cheers, Thompson, Whistles.
Yeah.
But in a way, you got to edit your religion.
Oh,
how'd I do? How'd I do? I think that's pretty good. Pretty damn good.
Do I love you?
Was it like that?
Yes. That's you know what? We're done.
All right.
It's great.
Cool. Wrapped it up in a nice little bow.
Perfect little bow. Good out. Good out.
Cool. So like, okay. So which parent was which?
Mom was Christian. Dad was Jewish.
Uh huh. And how did they meet? College.
Yes. My dad is a doctor. He's a gastroenterologist.
Ooh, wow.
So he does your colonoscopies when you turn 40.
Uh huh.
And my friends in high school used to call him the butt doctor.
How did he feel about that?
I don't think I ever told him that they called him that.
I mean, he's have to have had like lots of nicknames.
Yeah.
But
my friends would always nudge me like, "Hey, Dad's a butt doctor." I'm like, real mature,
mm-hmm.
very mature. And my mom was in nursing school, and so they met when my dad was in his residency, I believe, in Chicago.
Gotcha.
So he was a nurse. My dad was a doctor.
Cool. So they grew up in their own separate, completely religious traditions.
Yes. Yes.
Now, I'm curious because I had zero choice as a kid. I was like, oh, you're Presbyterian because we're Presbyterians. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
Now, were they both, was it like you should pick one or like you could pick one or the other? You can pick neither?
Well, I'd have to say there was definitely a strong leaning towards Christianity. I think mainly because my mom was much more devout than my dad was in his religion.
Mm-hmm.
Which I seem to gather from going to synagogue and temple enough times and meeting enough Jewish people and they were my friends.
Yeah, yeah.
At least in the circles that I ran, even because my whole dad's side of the family was Jewish, mm-hmm. and so we celebrated Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Passover, and we had seders and we went to temple and
mm-hmm.
I never had a bar mitzvah, but all my cousins did, and so we went to those. And so just talking to them and after getting a feel for Judaism, it was like, it was more of a tradition than it was a religion.
Yeah.
And it was more ritualistic. People just, you just go through the motions because it was your history and it was your heritage.
Yeah.
But, you know, most people in temple are like, are not even paying attention to the sermon. They're just like, they're just reciting the prayers from memory.
Interesting.
You know, you go to Hebrew school, you do your half Torah portion at your bar mitzvah and then whatever.
Yeah.
But like there was very little spirituality that I felt going there. So I think that's why I didn't connect with it as much.
Yeah.
And I think it's why my dad didn't connect with it as much. You know, they just kind of preach, to be totally honest, like it was like very surface level sermons. It was just like, be a good person and let's relate that to stuff like that. But like they would rarely tie it to, they like maybe cite a verse from the Torah to like
uh-huh.
But it was like, I don't know, it wasn't much substance to me.
Yeah, it's like keep doing the habits.
Yes, like, you know? like very much so.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why I didn't, it didn't resonate with me as much as opposed to my mom, who was very devout. You know, she grew up in the Philippines until she was 18. Her dad was a traveling pastor, you know, very, very sheltered, very super conservative, hyper conservative. And so she kind of like seemed to shine more. And it, to see it like emanate from her personality and stuff like that, too, I think that's kind of what drew us to it. And then we went to church and it just, the sermons were better. The people we met there were really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that's kind of how and why I gravitated towards, because I identify as a Christian now.
Okay, cool.
And also my dad converted.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
After many years, he was very, like, he had very adverse reaction to it. I think it was just because, you know, you're just, like, not supposed to believe in Jesus, and or not supposed to believe in Jesus as
the Messiah.
The Messiah, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just how he was raised, and so it was this weird thing where it's a, how do you go, it's very hard to, how do you go against what your parents, who you know and love and respect, if that's what they believe. But I think as he, you know, he matured in his marriage and his own life, and realizing that he's just like, you know what, I think he wanted something more spiritual. He's a spiritual guy, just by nature, a very emotional guy, and I think that he just started slowly connect with that as he kept going to church, and then eventually he like full on converted.
Cool. What denomination was it?
Christianity.
Yeah. Was it non-denominational?
Yeah, which I loved. All the churches it was. Evangelical, but then our church slowly evolved, and then it became non-denominational.
Gotcha.
And then I went to church in college.
That was at Michigan, right?
Yeah, at Michigan. Became and I played in the band there.
Cool.
And,
yeah.
And got pretty involved in college, and that was also non-denominational church, which I just really enjoy.
Yeah.
The vibe.
What was your band name?
Was a band name?
Did you have a band name?
I think we had a band name. I think it's just like New Life Church was the name of the church. Church band.
Yeah. Sometimes you hear about like praise bands having like
the
Souls of Spirit.
Oh,
or something.
Yeah. No. Nothing like that. I mean, but the majority of our songs we played were Hillsong songs. I don't know if you've heard of
Hillsongs. No, I haven't heard of those.
Hillsong is the name of a church, a mega church started in Australia.
Yeah.
And now they have plants all around the world, like in New York and London. And
they
have one in LA. They just opened up a few years ago.
Oh, cool.
But it's a huge church. It's also, I think, non-denominational for the most part. Don't quote me on that. But they became very popular because their music is excellent.
Oh, yeah?
And I'm not just saying it's like, it's not like good for church. It's like really good music.
Uh-huh.
Like all their musicians and singers are like insanely talented. They come out with an album every single year, sometimes multiple albums every year.
Yeah.
And those songs become like the standard for like a lot of the non-denominational modern churches and like their praise and worship teams.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking about it, because every now and then I'll peruse. I have Google Play and I'll peruse the praise music on Google Play. I either see them or like, there is some stuff where it's like, it sounds like a U2 concert.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, just like that arena rock type feel.
Yes, that's kind of like their MO is kind of like that same kind of like very epic. Sometimes meditational, but like, giant arena rock feel, but it's like, it's really good stuff.
Yeah. And I think I'm thinking back to my own, you know, cause my church was not, it didn't have a praise band. it was like a big deal for us to go to like let the praise band play in the early service. Like that was like that rocked the boat a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Like, whoa. Yeah, yeah.
They're like, what's wrong with the organ?
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember I would have youth conferences where there would be praise bands, yeah. And like it was much more like, right, this is the stuff that teens actually might have a chance at liking.
Yeah,
listening,
yeah, yeah,
to it. I think there's an advantage of like playing music really loudly in those settings that you feel less self-conscious about singing,
right,
than when it's like there's that organ, like, and you can hear
one piano, yeah, each, yeah, yeah,
person,
yeah, yeah,
next to you.
I heard that like there's my brother, he went to like his wife's parents' church one time, and he was just telling me, I was just with him, and he was saying how like it's like super traditional, like old school. And they don't even have like a worship leader who like helps sing along. They just have a piano, and then they just ask the congregation to sing along with the piano. But there's literally nobody on stage singing.
Wow!
So you can hear every single person in the congregation singing, and no one wants to sing. So it's just like dead silent.
Yeah,
just super awkward.
Yeah, that's so intimidating.
Yeah,
yeah. But there's still something like, it's weird how I guess it all averages out. Like if you get enough people who aren't trained to sing,
yeah,
like myself, and but like you get like 100 of them, like, yeah, oh, they're bad singing. All averages out. So like,
yeah, it kind of works out.
Yeah.
What is like? Because that's the thing, is I never had much experience with any denominational churches. What makes Presbyterian specifically? Like,
well, there's a couple different things that, and there's also a big difference between what made them Presbyterians 200 years ago,
yeah,
100 years ago,
yeah,
versus now.
Right.
So, like, okay, originally, like, doctrine-wise, that people, I'm going to say a lot of Presbyterians, this doesn't really factor into their, most Presbyterians don't think about things in this way.
Yeah.
But originally, there was, like, this idea of predestination that, like, everybody, it was already decided whether you're going to heaven or hell, mm-hmm, or not. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't try to do good anyway. Like, you should still try to do good, but, like, it's not, and it doesn't have to do with what you do. It's by, like, God's grace that you're going to go to heaven or not. But
yeah,
but you should still be a good person. There's just, like, not necessarily an incentive to. It's,
I
like,
see,
a weird,
interesting
thing. And a lot of people, yeah, that's, like, a big thing that a lot of other denominations didn't agree with. Anyway, and then as of now, they're a pretty, like, I would say, you know, I would categorize them as a fairly moderately liberal denomination, especially the clergy. They've had women ministers for 50 years. There's a big split kind of going on now of like whether like gay pastors should be allowed to,
yeah,
preach or not. My dad has married some gay people before.
Yeah.
So
sure,
they're pretty like, as far as that stuff goes, I mean, it's like a pretty open, accepting, like very traditionalist though. Like it's still like, they're nicknamed the Frozen Chosen by a lot of people because it's like very, their services, people are very like,
oh,
it's very like done a certain way. Like it's a quiet, there's like, it's, yeah, you don't clap for people like unless it's the kids. Like it's like
unless it's the kids.
Yeah, the kids, it's like, okay, let's clap for the kids because they don't get it, but like everybody else is just like reverence.
Yeah, they'll learn to not clap, but for now,
yeah,
yeah, we'll ease them into it.
You know, I'm 50-50 on like how much clapping should be done in church. I imagine in non-denominational churches with praise bands, there's a good amount of clapping.
Very much, yeah.
Yeah, but like there is something, just to play devil's advocate, there's something about like, oh yeah, it's for God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, we shouldn't be like giving your ego praise.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, it's almost like overthinking it on some level.
No, but I get that. There's sometimes, yeah, where it's just like it is too much. And I think like specifically at New Life when I went to church in college, it wasn't overly. It was just like, it's like you clap when you feel like clapping, but it's like there were times when it seemed like appropriate to, but it wasn't just like every single thing they say. It's,
yeah,
just like, what the heck? Yeah.
Well, because then I guess I'm just imagining like then you could get into problems of like like people getting jealous that they're clapped at harder than,
oh, yeah,
like that
for sure.
Like,
yeah,
there's yeah, always like some 17-year-old high school girl that just kills it with,
yeah,
like some vocal performance.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah,
just some masterful, like sounds,
yeah,
like she's been doing this for 30 years,
yeah,
and you're just like, oh my God.
Give her a Grammy.
Yeah, yeah. And then like, you know, you have like a boys choir, you're like, man, that was
yeah,
okay.
I mean, it's good.
That was all right.
Pleasant,
well,
sounding. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so is the music the biggest part that connected for you in church, or is there something?
Not so much when I was growing up. I mean, there was good music. It was good music, but it was more of the teachings and the people originally. But then what caught my eye in college when I was looking for a church was New Life specifically was known for their band around the campus. Mm-hmm. Like it was like no holds barred. It was like loud rock music.
Yeah.
And like most people, when they hear about church in general or Christianity or anything, nobody associated the music with that. And they do play Hillsong songs, but they like they really rock.
Yeah.
Which is awesome because I'm a huge metal fan. Like I love listening to metal music. Yeah. And so that like really spoke to me, especially because like they're in their musicians like instrumentality or whatever you want to call it.
Musicianship
is a great word. Yeah. Was so good. And I was just like, this is great. Like this, I love this. And so before I even like heard many, like thought about most of the sermons, I was like, the music is great. And I really connect a lot to music in general. I think I respond to music well. I love cutting music videos.
Yeah.
Like I just, something about music to me is very spiritual and just like, I love everything about it. And so I think that's what drew me the most. And then I was able to, meet the people and see the sermons afterwards. And,
yeah,
but that's what initially
cool
hooked me. Yeah.
Now I'm curious. I'm always curious of how, you know, Christians in Los Angeles, I've had a few on the podcast now.
Yeah.
I'm always curious, especially in the comedy world, because,
yeah,
you know, and part of what like sort of made me interested in even pursuing this project in general was like, it does seem like almost like there's like such a it's not even just secular. It seems comedy. It's like, it's always making fun of Christianity.
Yeah.
It always seems to be at odds.
Yeah.
I mean, do you feel like you kind of, I don't know, do you feel like persecuted at all?
I think maybe when I was younger, I probably would have.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes even in college, because I went to University of Michigan, which is a very liberal,
right,
super liberal campus.
Right.
And then especially coming out here to like one of the most liberal cities in the planet.
Yeah. And I went to Chapel Hill, which is a similarly.
Oh, yeah. You did? Oh, crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know there's a bunch of people from Chapel Hill and UCB. So,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's a very similar campus, I think,
oh,
like
okay,
demographically,
yeah,
very liberal.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And so I think I kind of was able to like get past those like gut feelings of feeling persecuted,
yeah,
in college. I like sorted through that already. So coming out here, I was kind of prepared for that.
Yeah.
And I think I kind of have more of an outlook now of like, well, let me preface this also by saying that, like, I do identify myself as a Christian, but having gone to school in Michigan and also coming out here and having a bunch of friends who are not Christian,
mm-hmm,
and somebody who, like, hate Christianity,
yeah,
just nothing against me, it's just they just do not agree with it at all.
Right.
I have definitely become, I think, more like, on the moderate scale. I've definitely, like, had to, like, healthily question my beliefs a lot.
Sure, yeah.
A lot of people make great arguments about certain things, and before, yeah, I did, you know, because it was what I grew up with and I had nothing else challenging me for the most part in a very conservative city as well where I grew up.
Uh-huh.
Most people did not question my beliefs or my values,
yeah,
until I went to college. And then people literally started, you know, questioning me to my face.
Yep.
And I couldn't answer stuff that I was just like, you know what? I have been sort of like blindly saying yes to a lot of the things in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's healthy to question that stuff because it's a very old piece of literature, and some stuff I think now is archaic or needs to be updated.
Right.
And a lot of pastors and sermons now in the more modern churches have done that very well, but
yeah,
it's still, there's still some core things that it's just like, you know, yeah, like how do you deal with homosexuality? Like that's a huge hot button topic.
Yeah.
And how do you reconcile with that if, you know, Christians think that it is a sin.
Right,
but you have gay friends, and but it's just, you know, I've had to talk to people about that a lot. So anyway, I digress.
No, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of come at it now, being like a more moderate Christian, and
yeah,
having a lot more, I think, flexible views.
Yeah.
That I identify as Christian, and if people don't like Christianity, that's fine, but I like to like just lead by example. And it's just like, if you think,
yeah,
because most people's encounters with Christianity are like the people on the soapbox,
right?
Which sucks, because the people that only people that get the screen time or the people that get attention are the people that are fucking yelling, like,
yeah,
on us, like a street corner.
Yeah.
And that is not how, in my experience, and like how I was raised in our church, that is the absolute opposite way you're supposed to be going about,
yeah,
spreading the word is like not fire and brimstone. It is the worst possible way to do it. Uh-huh. It's through like hate and blaming and guilt.
Yeah.
And I hear a lot of that in Catholicism too. I had a lot of Catholic friends, and it's just like, and it killed me because it's like I grew up in a completely different opposite environment. And so, but unfortunately, you know, I have to like put a little bit of the blame or not blame, but like a little bit of the responsibility on the people that like non-denominational churches and the churches that I grew up with, because they're not nearly as outspoken.
Mm.
Because there's a way to do it, I think, but just like not the way that you see it. And so that's the experience that most people have out here or in college. And so a lot of people, when they meet me, eventually they learn out. I don't push it on them at all. I mean, some people will see my tattoo or whatever,
uh-huh.
and it's a good conversation piece. But for the most part, they don't even realize I'm Christian, and I don't push it on them until they slowly do. And I've had people comment before, especially working in the film industry. It's also super liberal industry.
Yeah.
People are just like, they're like, you're Christian? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, oh, weird. It's just, I don't normally, you know, I haven't really met people that are like you, that are like open to things or just like,
right.
Or that swear or that whatever. It's just like, or, you know, yeah, or like yeah. have different views about, you know, sex before marriage or whatever. I don't know. It's just like, yeah, it's, so yeah, I lead by example, I guess, and I just like I let my actions speak for themselves, and then if people are drawn to that, I like to think that I could make change people's views on Christianity because it gets a bad rap, especially nowadays.
Well, it's definitely much more like it's much more compelling to hear about like oh Greg's a cool guy, and then you hear later, wait Greg is Christian? Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
yeah. Versus that's... like Greg tells me he's a Christian.
Yeah.
And then you're like evaluating every little thing. You're
yes,
like,
exactly.
Like, I don't know.
That's exactly it. It's like if I just walked up and then like, you know, the first thing they knew about me is I was a Christian. It was instant judgment.
Yeah.
Instant judgment. So I like to, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And you can't really blame people either. There's so much, there is so much baggage out there. And like you said, there's so many people given their hot take Christianity.
Yeah.
And you know, it's only the hot takes that are interesting.
It's like
there are I know and I've grown up with pretty moderate Christians or very liberal. I mean, the Presbyterians are very open minded people and very interreligious and into interfaith activities. They don't even believe they have a claim on like God, you know,
sure.
But that's like just not as interesting to, or it doesn't grab headlines. It's not as compelling. It's like, oh, so you love everyone. Cool. I mean, that's what you should be doing.
Yes. It's so true. But unfortunately, it's not like the sexiest, you know, like talk, but it's the way that I think it should be. And I think, to be honest, a lot of people would be surprised that there's a lot of values in Christianity that actually align with a lot of liberal people's views.
Oh, for sure.
They just don't realize because that's not what they hear. But even just like the way that, like, you know,
right.
Jesus taught his teachings, and a lot of people like to cite that it's like Jesus was in the fucking trenches.
Yeah.
Like with everybody. And well, he loved everybody. Yeah. Like,
yeah. And he was the rebel. He was overthrowing, the temple, finances in the temple.
Yeah.
You know?
And so a lot of people don't associate or realize that, and because that's not what they teach or what these people that you hear about, they skip over that part.
Yeah.
And they just talk about, you know, Old Testament God and how you should burn in hell and stuff like that. And it's like, nope.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the problem. It's like, you know, the problem is not only is, you know, a moderate Christianity and like accepting tolerance, it's not as headline grabbing. It's not as attention. It's not as enraging as like everybody's going to hell type stuff.
Right.
If you're also trying to live by example, you know, like the song, they will know we are Christians by our love.
Yeah.
It's not, they'll know we are Christians because of our podcast.
No.
Or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Then it's like people just never hear about it. They'll just never know. I mean, that's, I guess that's the issue. I mean, I'm curious, have you had it be a problem in any kind of relationships that you've had? Do you try to date Christians or?
It's a great question. Yes and no. Mm-hmm. I think the people that I have dated have been, I think I'm actually drawn towards people that, weren't Christian.
Yeah.
I don't think that's for any particular reason, I'd say. I don't, and like my mom specifically is, you know, has always pushed for me to, like, you know, like, always nudge in the back of my mind. She's gotten much better about it since I've been older. But she's always just like, you know, I mean, just saying, it would help. And there's merit to that.
She was a good Christian family.
Yeah, there's merit to that. Yeah. Here's the other thing, too. The other interesting thing. So I only have one other sibling, my younger brother. Very different life paths, but he is in full-time ministry at the church I went to in college.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So he's extremely involved in that. And, you know, I kind of get it from him, too, now. Like, it's just like, you know, it would help to, if you identify as Christian and want to continue in your faith, it does help to be, to date and marry somebody who has similar values as you, so that you can already get, you can get past that base level,
yeah,
and skip a lot of those arguments that you may have otherwise.
Yep.
And it makes your relationship, it potentially makes your relationship stronger.
Absolutely, man.
And so I get that, but I don't know, in past years, especially being out here, I've not really found a church that I like really have stuck with so far. And I like, I still do believe in a lot of like the core values of Christianity, and I still do identify as a Christian, but there've just been a lot of things that have made me question certain aspects of it, and I just haven't really related to that lifestyle much in the past years, and so I think maybe that's part of the reason why.
You haven't found one church yet? Or?
Yeah, I think it's part of the reason why I also like am like not necessarily like chomping at the bit to like necessarily seek out a Christian girl. If she is Christian, that's great. But like, I, you know, I think it's a terrible thing to like associate like those relationships with like being uptight and like super super goody two shoes. And these are terrible generalizations, but it's just like, I don't know. I still haven't quite figured it out myself in my own life, to be totally honest, but I think, the people that I have dated, I don't think any of them have really been like, at least as into Christianity as me, or a Christian at all. I mean, my longest relationship, I dated a girl in college who was Indian, completely different relationship values, but she respected it.
Yeah.
And she even like came to church one time, but it was just like one of those things where we have different ideas of like, spiritually about certain things, but like I think at the end of the day, I think honestly there sometimes their values will rub off on me, because like when specifically my girlfriend in college, she was one of those few people that like really questioned me to my face about some of the things that I kind of just like blindly believed in.
Yeah.
And I actually absolutely attribute part of my being more moderate and liberal now to her.
Yeah.
Because she really like made me see things that I was just like, you know what? You're right. Like it's.
Do you remember one, like anyone in particular, or
like a certain issue?
Yeah, I mean the classic one that comes up. I don't know if this is one, but the problem of evil being like, how can evil exist if God is all knowing and all powerful?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I can pinpoint it down to one specific thing, but it was. I think homosexuality was one of the things, because I think at the time I from high school to the beginning of college, I didn't really have any actual gay friends that I was close to.
Yeah.
I knew gay people, but in my school, but I think especially in where I grew up, the town was conservative, and a lot of people were very afraid to come out, if at all.
Right.
So I didn't know very many people, and so one of her best friends growing up was gay, and so she used to like. Really not like just very healthily playing devil's advocate and just being like, look, he's one of my absolute best friends. Why should you treat him any differently otherwise? And it took me a while to kind of like really think of a right answer, but it made me like try to at least research and to, so I can at least justify myself or not justify myself.
Yeah.
And really think about like, what do I believe? Mm-hmm. And how I feel and how do I view it? And so, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard when you don't, especially with like anything that's alien or foreign to us. And if it's, you know, if you've never really hung out with gay people, you just have this
caricature of what gayness is, or what, like, the homosexual agenda.
Yeah.
You know, some nefarious plot to take over America. You know, it's like, I mean, that's just a so purely human thing. And in a way, I mean, that's what people do to Christians who they haven't met. You know, they only see the quote, for lack of a better word, a flaming Christian.
Yeah. No,
you know,
yeah, exactly.
On like the internet somewhere, they hear like, oh, Christians are all this. They're all like, you should stay away from them. They're a scourge.
Yeah.
But then they're like, wait, wait, you're a Christian? Oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually another thing that I do take issue with, too, as of late, is that, like, Christians get ripped all the time. Mm-hmm. For good reason. There's a lot of like, you know, like, stupid people out there that are just, like, making terrible, hateful things and spreading terrible, hateful messages.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and, you know, like, you can imagine, like, on the internet, and, like, somebody leaves, like, a hateful comment or something like that, they just get ripped apart in the comments or whatever. And, sometimes I'll challenge people who, like, because even some of my, like, my roommates or my friends will just get, like, so angry at these people. And I understand the hate. It's, like, absolutely justified. But at the same time, I was like, but also think of, like, how you're treating them. Because, yes, they are being terrible people, what they say, but they're also people.
Right.
You're literally doing the same thing that they're doing to homosexuals or what have you.
Right.
But you think it's justified because they threw the first punch. And it's like,
right.
You guys are doing just the same thing. It's like, don't. The best thing is to not, like, you know, people get death threats. And it's like, that is so insane. It's the exact same thing. It's,
yeah.
So,
well, it's like tribalism, you know, on some level. It's like, oh, they're not part of my group and they're part of the out group.
Yeah.
And I don't want, like, we need to make them an enemy.
Yeah. And it's like, that's literally the same argument that they're making about, you know, homosexuals. And it's just like, just check yourself before you start slinging, you know, just as much, if not more, hate back.
Yeah.
And I understand that people get passionate about those issues, and, like, sometimes it's a human nature to just, like, get welled up with anger, but it's like, it's literally the same thing. We're all human beings at the end of the day, and we're all feeling those same instinctual emotions when somebody attacks something that we care about or love.
Totally.
And so it's just like, you know, but I think a lot of people lose sight of that because the crazy people, which there seem to be less of, and they're the minority a lot of the times in the news, are Christians. And so it's okay to, like,
going back to and it's you know, without naming any specific names or churches, I mean, is there a particular, why has it been harder for you to find a kind of a home base? Because I'll tell you, I'm looking for, well, not a strictly Christian church per se, I'm casually looking around for, like, some kind of home base of something.
Yeah.
I mean, my views tend to line up with, like, Unitarian or, like, Zen or something. Like, so I've got, like, too many options sometimes.
Yeah.
But what has been so difficult for you to, like, pick one?
I think, well, to be 100% honest, because I always keep 100 with you, Joe.
Yeah, please, man.
I think it's not. It's been my sort of, like, movement on this scale of, like, where I think I have fit myself.
Yeah.
I think in the past, specifically since I moved out here, I've been, like, really challenging myself and questioning myself about, like, you know, like, what views I believe in. And I think I'm not in the headspace or even quite there in terms of, like, how devout I used to be, because I was, like, very much, like on the, like, super conservative scale in a lot of ways and a lot of my views. But after meeting a lot of people out here in LA and just having certain life experiences, I've, like, gone more to the middle, even further past that, I would say. And so I think, like, part of it has been for lack of searching. I think when I first moved out here, I was, like, really looking for something, and my parents and my brother were all, like, you know, like, gotta find a church, gotta find a church.
Yeah.
And, you know, my whole mom's side of the family is super devout Christian. And so I'd see them on the holidays, like, have you found a church yet? And I was like, no. And then, like, it was a lot of things that built up. I think it was part of the nagging, part of the other thing that just like turned me off to it.
Yeah. The more you're told to do something, the less you want to do it.
Yeah. And then just, like, I went to multiple churches out here and just, like, nothing really spoke to me. And I was like, I don't know if I really am in a place in my life where I'm, like, about this particular lifestyle.
Yeah, man.
And people might knock me for being like, well, you're just like picking and choosing certain parts of Christianity to like identify with. But like, if you're like, you can't just be half Christian, which I agree.
Uh-huh.
I agree. But at the same time, yes, I absolutely still do believe that there's certain values that Christianity teaches that are, that align with what I believe.
Yeah.
And I strongly believe in that. And, you know, I still strongly believe that Jesus is the Messiah. And so like, there are just certain core things that I think. It's the reason why I got, one of the reasons why I got my tattoo is like, I don't think I will ever part ways with that mm-hmm. part of it.
Which says, but faith, just for those listening, it says faith.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So yeah. But there are certain parts that I think that it's like healthy to question and argue about. And I've never really fully sorted out that, probably because I haven't surrounded myself with people to have a dialogue with. And most of my friends are not out here are not religious or spiritual, and so like it's kind of just gotten rusty and dusty for the most
totally.
To be totally honest, and I'm not happy. I am definitely not happy with the way my spiritual life is kind of fallen by the wayside, and I can chalk it up to crazy schedule
and
all sorts of things, and I don't make as much time as I should or I would like, but it also doesn't necessarily bug me right now at this very moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, it's, again, going back to like kind of what made me want to start this podcast, it is like, so hard for me to fit in with any one given church, because like I've always, there's almost every community I've come across, I want to poke holes in something or something doesn't quite sit well with mm-hmm. me, or I can't 100% identify with it. And so it's like, can we do religion a la carte? Do we need to have a church? I don't know. Sometimes, right now, I'm kind of like in the camp of like, well, the community is fucking great. Community is awesome. And having that is important to me.
Yeah.
And having now, but that's the problem. It's just like, you know, picking a relationship. It's like real, except even more heightened in that your values really do need to line up, and your kind of philosophy on life needs to line up. Now, and I'm hearing like that same, like, you kind of want things to be able to be questioned or called out. You want that dialogue. But, like, if you go to a church service, that's not where people do the questioning, unfortunately.
No. Yeah.
People are like, they're like rallying the troops. They're like, hey, we all agree, right? This is great.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I will say that, like, there are the churches that I did connect with were the ones that actually do, step one is questioning it, and then two, trying to find answers to that, and healthily trying to find like answers in their own teachings that would lead to an answer, like some kind of answer to that question.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the churches I've been to have been very liberal and stuff like that, and they like are not afraid to deal with like, you know, very dirty or like not that's not the right word. Just very controversial topics.
Yeah.
And not just keeping it at arm's length and just quoting Bible verse and be like, well, that's what they say and that's what we believe. It's just like, no, like, like actually having a discussion about it with real life examples and then talking about how that can apply to us. And so, mm-hmm. I probably like don't give the church as much credit as I should, because that's the thing. Is it like, I because I've been away from for so long, that is the aversion the adverse effect I have of just like thinking about the community is great, but it's like nobody's questioning anything, and like everybody's like in this little sort of like neatly tied.
Well, and we have so many choices out here.
Yeah, it's that's true, but
it's almost like dating out here can be like there's just too many options, so you're always. For me, I'll just speak for myself. There can sometimes be a grass is always greener feeling. Like, oh, if it's not 100% perfect,
for sure.
Which will it ever be? Probably fucking not.
Yeah, no.
You know? I mean, but like versus like when you're in a small town, maybe you have less options. You're like, well, I'll make this work. Is that ideal either? No.
Yeah.
But it makes it, I don't know, maybe it's easier to make it work than out here. You're like, well, it's like, you're just looking around. And you're like, oh, I don't like.
Yeah.
I don't like praise bands. I don't, you know, I don't agree with how they baptize people or like whatever. Yeah.
And so, I'm in limbo in a lot of ways, I think.
Hey man, limbo is a
perfect,
you know what? Sometimes limbo is the most honest place you can be.
Yeah.
What, like, it's better to be, I think it's so much better to be that than to be dishonestly like, well, I'm going with the flow,
yeah,
you know, just doing whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing that I think kind of was, I wouldn't call it a speed bump, as I would call it like a healthy, like, reality check.
Yeah.
So my dad has converted, I would say, although he's like 95% converted.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why there's an extra 5% that is in there is because we had a conversation not that long ago that kind of like really shook me to the core. Mm. And I knew that this question has been posed before, but like now that it was like, it actually directly related to us. So his dad passed away. Mm. You know, devout Jewish man. But, you know, I looked up to my grandfather. He was one of the just like one of the greatest men I've ever met in my entire life. He's just everything about him was the values that he taught his kids, how he raised his kids, what he believed in, like how he treated other people.
Yeah.
He just led a great, honest, noble life.
Yeah.
And my dad held him in such high regard, and he just could not get over the fact that he's just like, so you mean to tell me, according to what church teaches us, that because he did not accept Christ at all in his life, after the entire life that he led,
yeah,
that he would not go to heaven?
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't in good conscience accept that right now.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. I don't remember how the conversation came up. We just started getting into this like deep conversation. I think it was over the holidays or something, and it was just like, how do you answer that to anybody, one, and then two, your own dad, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't know.
It's tough, man.
It's extremely tough, and it's just like, it's shitty questions like that, where I just had to, I don't know, it made me think, for sure. And seeing my dad, like, being totally honest and questioning that, even because I look up to my dad in so many ways, and just, like, seeing him be vulnerable and, like, not having it all figured out too, but also posing some pretty real and like questions, not without merit. It's like, yeah, it's an excellent question.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to say.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't have any answer for that either. Yeah. I know there are, you know, there's just so many, nobody knows what happens in the afterlife.
Yeah.
And that's where it's like, I've personally never really bought into the idea of an afterlife hell. I mean, even as a child, I remember thinking like, this isn't like, really, why would God do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. My views of heaven and hell, and coming from a non-Christian perspective, but you know, heaven, I think the heaven that Jesus taught was that there's this, the kingdom of heaven being at hand is like this world we can create into a heaven, or we can make a heaven or hell right here and right now. And it's through these, like, it's through hateful behaviors that we get into our own personal hells. It's through the judging. It's through the egotistical gratification. It's through greed. It's through letting lust kind of rule your own show. That's how that's hell. And I've lived that hell.
Yeah.
And I don't know, for me, I mean, this is just one dude. I don't know. I think the idea that there would be a greater arbiter judging like who gets in, who doesn't, seem, I don't know. It's very hard for me to believe too.
It's weird that, like, I mean, they make it very simple. They preach it very simply. It's just like, you accept Christ or you don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, because a lot of people cut, I'm like, well, like, there's a score sheet, and it's like, no, it's like, it's all under the same umbrella. It's like,
right,
everybody sins and everybody like does bad things, but it's like, it all can be forgiven by accepting Christ.
Well, and to me, I see it as like a beautiful problem that the internet has created, and by living in a big city can create. It's like, oh, you start actually encountering people that contradict the caricature, that contradict the cartoonish versions of something.
Yeah.
You hear the arguments, you know, we have more scientific knowledge at our fingertips at my fucking smartphone. You know, you know, you have like, and it's so challenging compared to how it would have been 50, 60 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, some people it's, Some there's a million cliches for it. Old beliefs die hard, you know, whatever. Dogs, new tricks.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
One of those old adages.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes I think there's just some catching up to do. And, like, just like how, you know, people who believe in hell and like an actual afterlife hell or an actual afterlife heaven, you know, that's fine with me, I guess. I guess I just have, I just think we're all in, you know, we're all in.
How so? Like, what do you mean?
I don't think in a cosmic level on like an ultra, like if we zoom out far enough, I think if there is a God and he is all loving, we're all in. There's no out. There's no way you could possibly be.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Outside.
Right.
And yeah. It's just about like what's going to be a skillful, good way to live life. And I think that's where Christianity can have a lot of great things.
Yeah.
About.
Exactly. Yeah. I totally agree.
Living your values, having.
Yeah.
Like honoring your family, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's basic things, but it's like, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the biggest thing, which everybody cites is, you know, like treat others as you would be treated.
Right.
And it's such a cliche old thing, but like it is, so few people actually do it.
Yeah.
And
it's a pretty good go-to.
Like, and that's one thing that is just like that Christianity like really teaches and drives home.
Yeah.
And it's like a lot of people could use it today. A lot of people could use it today.
For sure.
And it's just
a good old golden rule.
Yeah.
It's pretty golden.
Yeah. I mean, it's because it goes hand in hand with, you know, like just love everybody. You know, like everybody is a human being.
Yeah.
It's another super cliche, simple thing, but it's like so many people, like, it's like you get caught up in so many other things and it's like you can really just sit back and think about it.
Yeah.
As like we all have a very common root in the fact that we're human beings with all the same emotions and feelings. And
yep.
Yeah.
We're all trapped in these meat bodies.
Yeah.
We're all susceptible to emotional whims.
Yeah.
You know, we can all,
yeah.
We all have our own weird biases and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, not to make a weird random connection, but it's also one of the reasons why I got into film and editing in particular, because editing is all about emotion, stuff like that, because I think it gets to that like human core.
Yeah.
Of human emotion, and it's one of the reasons why I think that it's the film industry, entertainment industry in general, is such a fascinating, on the artistic side, it's such a fascinating vocation, in the sense that like it's one of the only things that, you know, most people are like, oh, I don't watch sports, or oh, I don't follow politics, whatever, but it's like everybody watches movies, like everybody goes to see movies all around the world, and it's like this weird, it's this crazy universal language where it's like you can get down to like, you can get people, like films can get people to see things in other ways that like no other vehicle can.
Yeah.
And so that's...
It's like a magical empathy vehicle.
Yeah. And, you know, like you can get people across the world who have completely different views than you to like, if they just watched a movie, they can connect at a human level and see and be like...
And
make an effect, like a real effect on somebody.
Yeah.
So...
And that's a beautiful thing about art in general. And it's like...
Yeah, exactly. For sure.
It can show, not tell.
Yes, exactly. Art in general, but I think just specifically for me, like
film is your medium.
Film with the pairing of visual and sound, I think, is what makes it so powerful.
Yeah, and just to, you know, tie it back in, that's how you can show truth without trying to tell or preach truth. You know.
But anyway, yeah. So like that's just I think that's why I resonate towards film, and why I still resonate towards Christianity, is because like there's just those basic things that it's just like if you just took a small piece out of it and applied it to your daily life, I think you'd see a lot of good come out of it in your immediate relationships, you know, like in conversations, even just like biting your tongue that one extra time when you're talking to your friend, or just like
like
two extra seconds before you say something or do something can make a huge difference in your life. So
yeah, cultivating that self-awareness.
Yeah
Well, we're about out of time. So the end of the show, it goes one way or the other. There's with Christian, or I should say with people who don't have a religion, we ask them to make up their own religion. But since you already kind of have yours, I don't know. I feel weird about asking like somebody who like kind of believes in a religion to like invent one on the fly. So I guess instead, in lieu of that, is there any aspect of your personal Christianity, or you would like Christianity in general? I mean, we've really talked about this subject a lot, but is there anything that there would be an area of focus going forward that you would like to heighten or change, or I don't know, is there something
about my own personal like walk in my faith or the religion as a whole?
Either or.
Oh. Well, I mean, for me, I think like if I do I think I would like, I feel like I need to be walking the walk more than talking the talk.
Mm.
Yeah. I think that could, like, you know, help me out of my personal life in a bit. And so, and coming to terms with the fact that, like, you know, especially modern Christianity and the churches that I go to, I think have probably evolved in the years that I haven't gone. And so, like, for the reasons why I wouldn't want to go to church or, like, don't identify with it, I think, like, you know, hopefully, I would like to think that things hopefully might have changed and progressed, especially with a lot of, you know, the way our society has evolved and become more accepting and open to and liberal. Our society as a whole has become more liberal to, like, just a more progressive society, I think, at least in the United States.
Yeah.
In a lot of areas. And so seeing how churches have reacted to that. But I think that'd probably also be something that I would, having not been to church in a while, like regularly gone to church in a while, what I have hoped would have been that, like, the church has been able to move and progress just as society has progressed along with it. Because I think that was one of their biggest, I think that was one of their biggest flaws. And what I noticed, at least in the 90s and early 2000s, when I used to go to church all the time, is that it's just like the church didn't progress as fast as the rest of society did. And it's like you have to move with the times.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it becomes irrelevant. And then everything you're preaching is just going to fly over people because it just does not connect.
Right.
And I think that applies to every aspect of life. It's like you need to progress with the times because times are changing. Christianity absolutely needs to change.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you just keep going back to, like, quoting 1,000-year-old Bible verses, it's like, unless you can, like, there are new versions of the Bible now which are up to date, which I think are great.
Yeah.
They updated the vernacular and just everything about it. And I think that's a step in the right direction, but I think it needs to be so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there have to be churches out there that are doing that. But I as more of a whole, just to, I think, to get more people on the same page, because there are so many people that are living in the past, like, literally.
Totally, yeah.
And so,
gotta live in the present.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's just a big thing that Christianity should and hopefully has worked on. But
cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, that's it.
Cool, man.
The interrogation is over. Your faith is off trial now.
Yeah. The one, like, swinging light in the middle.
Yeah.
In the interrogation. Yeah. It's a great podcast. It's really cool.
Yeah. Thanks so much for doing it, man. This is great.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Well, that's the show. Once again, thanks so much to Greg for coming out. Check out the Lonely Island movie. Check out Zamboni Grenade on YouTube. Check out ChooseYourOwnReligion.com if you like this episode. Get at me. Tell me what you think. And from one hypocrite to another, I love you. God bless.
What's a Creative Podcast Network?